It's Tuesday, April 28th, and welcome to Higher IQ. During World War II, an American Army doctor named Henry Beecher was treating soldiers at the Anzio beachhead in Italy. Men were brought to him with terrible burns, bullet wounds, and shattered bones. He would offer them morphine, and many of them refused. They said they didn't feel any pain. These weren't minor injuries. These were wounds that, in a civilian hospital, would have patients screaming for relief. Beecher documented the phenomenon. 75% of his badly wounded soldiers reported so little pain that they didn't want medication. Something about the context, the fact that they had survived, that they were being evacuated, that the worst was behind them, had turned down their pain as if by a dial. Beecher spent the rest of his career trying to understand what he'd witnessed, and what he and the researchers who followed him discovered has overturned nearly everything we thought we knew about pain. Pain is not a direct readout of damage. It's a judgment your brain makes about how much danger you're in, and that judgment can be wrong. Before 1965, the dominant theory of pain was what scientists called the specificity theory. There are dedicated pain receptors in your body. They send signals up a fixed pathway to your brain, and what you feel is a direct measure of how much tissue damage has occurred. More damage equals more pain. The theory was clean, intuitive, and wrong. It couldn't explain Beecher's soldiers. It couldn't explain why rubbing a stubbed toe makes it hurt less, even though rubbing doesn't repair the tissue. It couldn't explain why the same injury can produce wildly different levels of pain depending on the circumstances. And it couldn't explain why cutting the nerve pathways that carry pain signals to the brain, a procedure that was attempted repeatedly in the mid-20th century, often failed to relieve chronic pain. If pain were simply a pipeline from injury to brain, severing the pipeline should stop the pain. It didn't. In 1965, Ronald Melzack and Patrick Wall published a paper in Science that changed the field. Their gait control theory proposed that the spinal cord contains a mechanism that acts like a gate, regulating which pain signals reach the brain and which are blocked. The gait is influenced by multiple inputs: the pain signals themselves, non-pain signals from the same area, like touch and pressure, and signals descending from the brain itself. When non-pain signals overwhelm pain signals, the gait closes and pain decreases. This is why rubbing a stubbed toe actually works. The pressure signals from your hand travel on large, fast nerve fibers that reach the spinal cord before the slower pain signals from the injury. The fast signals partially close the gate, reducing the pain signal that reaches your brain. But the most radical part of the theory was the descending pathway. The brain doesn't just passively receive pain signals, it actively modulates them. It can open the gate wider, amplifying pain, or close it, suppressing pain, based on context, emotion, attention, and expectation. Beecher's soldiers weren't in less physical danger than a civilian with the same injury, but their brains were processing the context differently: survival, evacuation, relief. The descending signals from their brains were closing the gate. Their pain was being turned down, not at the wound, but at the spinal cord, before the signal ever reached conscious awareness. This is also why anxiety and fear amplify pain. When you're nervous in a dentist's chair, the brain opens the gate wider because it's predicting danger. The same procedure under sedation or in a calm, trusting environment produces measurably less pain. The physical stimulus is identical. The brain's interpretation of its significance is not. The most dramatic evidence that pain lives in the brain rather than in the body comes from phantom limb pain. An estimated 60 to 80% of amputees experience pain that seems to come from the limb they've lost. The hand that was removed 6 months ago clenches into a fist and won't unclench. The missing foot burns. The absent fingers ache. There is no tissue damage because there is no tissue. The pain is entirely generated by the brain. In the 1990s, neuroscientist V.S. Ramachandran proposed an explanation he called learned paralysis. Before amputation, many patients had limbs that were paralyzed or immobilized due to injury. Every time the brain sent a motor command to move the limb, it received feedback that the limb hadn't moved. Over time, through repetition, the brain learned that the limb was paralyzed. After amputation, the brain continued sending motor commands to the now missing limb and continued receiving no feedback. The mismatch between the motor command and the absent sensory response produced pain. The brain was interpreting the silence from the missing limb as a signal that something was terribly wrong. Ramachandran's treatment was deceptively simple. He built a mirror box, a device where the patient places their intact hand on one side of a mirror and looks at its reflection, creating the visual illusion that the missing hand has returned. When the patient moves their intact hand, the reflection makes it appear that the phantom hand is moving too. The brain, receiving visual confirmation that the paralyzed limb has finally moved, releases the learned paralysis. In clinical trials, patients who had suffered from phantom limb pain for years reported dramatic relief. One patient, whose phantom hand had been clenched in a painful fist for over a decade, watched the mirror reflection of his other hand open and felt his phantom hand unclench for the first time. The pain disappeared. A mirror tricked the brain into releasing pain that no physical therapy, medication, or nerve surgery had been able to touch. The pain was real. The cause was an error in the brain's model of the body. The cure was correcting the model. This understanding of pain as a brain process rather than a simple damage readout has enormous implications for chronic pain, which affects an estimated 50 million Americans and is the leading cause of disability worldwide. In many chronic pain conditions, the original injury has healed. The tissue is repaired. The scans are clean, but the pain persists, sometimes for years, sometimes for a lifetime. Under the old specificity model, this was a mystery, and patients were often told their pain wasn't real, that it was psychological, that they were exaggerating. The modern understanding is different. The pain is real. It's generated by the brain, and the brain has essentially learned to produce it. The neural pathways that carried pain signals during the original injury have been reinforced through repetition, like a path worn through grass, until the brain continues sending pain signals even after the cause is gone. Pain has become a habit the nervous system can't break. This is called central sensitization, and it's one of the most important concepts in modern pain science. The spinal cord and brain become hypersensitive to pain signals, amplifying them beyond what the physical stimulus warrants. A touch that should feel like pressure feels like a burn. A movement that should feel normal feels like a stab. The alarm system is stuck in the on position. The contrarian question worth asking is whether our entire approach to chronic pain has been backwards. For decades, the medical system treated chronic pain as a tissue problem. Find the damage, fix the damage, and the pain will stop. When that approach failed, patients were given opioids, which suppress pain signals chemically but do nothing to address the brain's learned pain response. The opioid crisis, which has killed over 500,000 Americans, is in part a consequence of treating a brain problem as if it were a body problem. The prescription worked for acute pain, the kind with a clear physical cause. Applied to chronic pain, where the brain itself is generating the signal, opioids mask the symptom without addressing the mechanism, and millions of people became addicted to a treatment that was never designed for their condition. Modern pain science is shifting toward treatments that target the brain's pain processing directly. Cognitive behavioral therapy, graded exposure therapy, mindfulness, and movement-based approaches that teach the nervous system to recalibrate its threat assessment. These treatments are not all-in-your-head dismissals. They're based on the same neuroscience that explains Beecher's soldiers and Ramachandran's mirror box. If the brain can turn pain down in a war zone, and a mirror can eliminate pain from a limb that doesn't exist, then the brain's role in generating and maintaining pain is not a theory. It's a measurable, modifiable physical process. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. Pain is not a direct measure of tissue damage. It's a judgment your brain makes about how much danger you're in, modulated by context, emotion, attention, and learned experience. Melzack and Wall's gate control theory, published in 1965, showed that the spinal cord filters pain signals before they reach the brain, and the brain can open or close that gate based on what it expects. Amputees feel pain in limbs that no longer exist because the brain's model of the body hasn't updated. Chronic pain patients hurt long after their injuries have healed because the nervous system has learned to produce pain as a habit. The implications are profound. If pain is a process the brain generates, then treating pain means treating the brain, not just the body. The soldiers at Anzio knew something that took medicine another 70 years to prove. Context changes everything, even pain. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.